Normally, I would be finishing off the 10th chapter, the last section. And the 10th chapter of Genesis is in three sections. All right? It's called the section of the sons, generations of the sons of Noah. Not Noah himself, but of his sons. And we know we listed the first son, and the first one listed was Japheth, and the next one was listed was Ham, and the third one was listed was Shem. Now, in the fourth chapter, it repeats some of the line of Shem. So today I'm going to be in the 11th chapter, and we need a reader, and then we'll go back and relook a little bit in the 10th chapter, so you can remember exactly what we talked about last Sabbath.
Genesis chapter 11. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as the people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had a brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. They said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the earth." And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, "Behold, they are of one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord dispersed them from there and over the face of all the earth. And they left off the building of the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. These are the generations of Shem. When Shem was 100 years old, he fathered Arshabad, who 2 years after the flood. And Shem, after he had fathered Arpachshad, 500 years, and had other sons and daughters. When Arpachshad had lived 35 years, he fathered Shelah. And Arpachshad lived after he fathered Shelah 403 years, and had other sons and daughters. When Shelah had lived 30 years, he fathered Eber. And Shelah lived after he fathered Eber 403 years, and had other sons and daughters. When Eber had lived 34 years, he fathered Peleg. And Eber lived after he fathered Peleg 430 years and had other sons and daughters. When Peleg had lived 30 years, he fathered Reu. And Peleg lived after he fathered Reu 209 years and had other sons and daughters. And Reu had lived 32 years, he fathered Serug. And Reu lived after he fathered Serug 207 years and had other sons and daughters. When Serug had lived 30 years, he fathered Nahor. And Serug lived after he fathered Nahor 209 years and had other sons and daughters. When Nahor lived 29 years, he fathered Terah. And Nahor lived after he fathered Terah 119 years and had other sons and daughters. When Terah had lived 70 years, he fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah fathered Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran fathered Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his kindred in Ur of the Chaldeans. And Abram and Nahor took wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Now Sarai was barren, she had no child. Terah took Abram's son, and Lot, and the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai's daughter-in-law, his son, Abram's wife, and they went forth from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. There they came to Paran and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran.
Okay, before we begin, any thoughts, any comments? Okay.
So there's a person named Haran and a place named Haran.
Correct. Okay. Let's just open up here and begin. Make a long story somewhat short. The 11th chapter, it centers around basically three areas, okay? And one, of course, is the tower. And the other one, of course, are the descendants of Shem. And the last one is the descendants of Terah. So it's in three different sections, much like when we looked at the 10th chapter. It's actually in three different subsections, and each one of them is different and separate from one another for a reason. Now remember, God put these names here for us to understand. They're not just names we have a hard time pronouncing. Well, we do have a hard time pronouncing them, but nonetheless, he tells us a story. Okay? And we'll go through some of these names again, not an awful lot of them today, but we'll go through some of them so you have an idea of why they were named that way. Remember, people are named, biblically named, after an event, not before the event. And it's kind of important to keep that in mind. Eve was named after the event, not before the event. Right? She became a mother, therefore her name was now Eve. All right? She wasn't mother. She wasn't an Eve. Wasn't a mother before she didn't have kids. So she wasn't called that. Yes.
So you don't think any of these names were prophetic?
Oh, yes.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is you're saying that they were named after a particular event, so the names were
prophetic. Yes, they are.
Then how can they be prophetic if they're named after an event rather than before the event?
Well, the event's telling us something that's going to happen. All right? The name will tell you what is going to happen as well. We'll get into that subject matter here today for a couple of things. Abram, what does the name Abram mean? What does his name mean? Before he was born as what? He was given a name. And what does Abram mean? The exalted father. Now, when he was a baby, did he get that name? Or was his name given to him because it was going to be a prophetic thing in the future? We are considered sons of Abraham. It's a prophetic thing, yes.
So are you saying that in the context, if I'm the father, I'm the dad, I have a baby and call him Abram, exalted father. Now, it would sound strange, meaning from my perspective, but...
Correct.
If I was naming him exalted father, not that he is exalted my father, but rather I'm naming him for the father of above, father of above. Much like most names, I named my son, you named your son, not based on what they were to you, but rather your perspective and thoughts of what your thoughts were to God at the time the child was born.
Many names we have. Remember, it says there in Deuteronomy, last week, what's 2 weeks? It was if men began to call themselves after the name of God. In other words, their name was related to the creator of heaven and earth. They identified themselves with the creator of heaven and earth. They didn't identify themselves with a rat, a dog, evolution, earth, water, stone. They identified themselves with God. And so therefore they took on names related and showed up to and connected with God. Remember, I said before, this book... The whole Torah is about what God thinks, what God says, what God acts, how God puts into action everything. It's not how men do things, not how women do things, but how God does things. whole Torah is everything about God. Everybody says, I don't know what God thinks. Well, read it, and it'll tell you exactly what he thinks. Now, in this particular point, last week we talked about a man named Nimrod. I told you he's only mentioned twice in the Bible. And we have, you know, a background of history about him and his wife and bad things, right? We've got all these images that we have. But the Bible didn't really center in on his wife at all. It centered in on the man. Now, you remember what the man's name means? Do you remember what the man's name means? A mighty warrior. And what did he do? What was he known for? In God's face, yeah, okay. What is he known for? Building
the first
kingdom. Built the first kingdom. There was no kingdom before that. It comes in, he's the first one. It comes in, and now it's called a kingdom. And it was his kingdom. Now, how many capitals did he have?
Four.
Four capitals. Which is very important that we come to understand those four capitals. Right? And, remember, there was no army, but he created one. There was no nation, but he created an army. And he took over. Where did he take power over? Where? No. Between the two rivers. Shinar, the word Shinar means between the two rivers. The land between the two rivers. He built four important cities. Now the Bible does not tell you, we'll get to one of them here. But those four cities, what were the names of the four cities? Do you remember? Nineveh was one of them. All right. Rehoboth and Calah and Resen. Now, we're used to a thing called the Tower, or we're used to a thing called Babel, right? Now, that was not the name of the city that he built. How did it get its name? It says here in the 11th chapter, it became called that because of what Yahuwah did. We'll talk more in detail exactly how he did it in a minute. It never called confusion, we'll get to that word in a minute, until after the languages were changed. Remember, they left off building the city and building the tower. One of these four cities, it's in the 10th chapter, let me get there if I can find it real quickly. Verse 12. This of the four cities that he had his running his power, his kingdom, there's an unusual one that says, verse 12, and Resen, between Nineveh and Calah. What does it say after that? It's the what? The great city. And we in our past, since we don't know where it's at, we know where Nineveh's at. They found that one. And they'll find the other city, but they never found this particular one. But it's called the great city. You find that fascinating? In the 10th chapter, it tells you it calls it the great city. Now, what does great mean? Oh, it's bigger than the rest? More powerful than the rest?
Well, we had riches, good land riches, probably.
Had what?
Good land riches. Something that comes from the soil. Enabled to sustain them.
Large. And
Does it mean the city was great in sin and transgression and wickedness? Or number of more people? Well, we'll talk about great city because in the 11th chapter, it addresses something. Actually, not the 11th chapter. We'll go later on. But keep that in mind about this great city. How many places in the Bible does the word great city show up? A lot of places. That's the first time that phrase has been used. It's in the 11th chapter. A great city. That month must have been greater than Nineveh. Right? Have you greater than Nineveh? More important than Nineveh? More something else than Nineveh, huh?
My wife puts
Nineveh's No. Between the two cities, between the two rivers, between Tigris River and Euphrates River, Jerusalem's way on the west coast, past that. They're on the west of the Euphrates. The phrase is very important for us to understand something. Now, how many times have we paid attention to this particular spot? Very little. And so we see here in chapter 11, it says the whole earth was in one language. They all could speak the same thing. Now, it came to pass that they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Now, what that means is that from the east, where Nimrod was living and made his army and made his power and made his might, he started moving closer and closer to the west coast, or closer to the Euphrates, the Euphrates River, isn't it? Yeah, Euphrates River. Now, it says there, and we read that in the previous chapter, that the beginning of Nimrod's kingdom was, and it says, Babel. Remember, it was named after the situation, not before. What was the name of his kingdom? We don't know the name of that city, do we? Or that area, because it was changed afterward, not before. Right? And then there's Erech and Akkad and Kalach and the land of Shinar. Now that's 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 4 cities and 4 kingdoms or 4 major territories. He had a major city in each one of those major areas. One of them was called the Great City. More than likely, it's probably where his headquarters were. That's my thinking. Doesn't mean anything. Now, we see something here. Verse 3. And it was his men. It says his men came with him. And he says, and they said to one another, go to and let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. Now in Hebrew, that word is not brick. That word is white. Come, let's make white. Come, let's make white and burn it in fire. Come, make it. Now, it's really hard to say this. Isaiah, you'll know it by heart. Don't turn there. Isaiah 1, verse 18. You'll all know this phrase. Come now and let us reason together, says Yahuwah. Through your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as brick as snow. It doesn't work, right? It's white. Okay, so we know that part. It doesn't make sense to make it called. Why was it the word white used? In our 1611 English, in a modern English, it's hard for us to picture white, to make white. Okay. Now, let's go one more place. Daniel 11, 35. Don't have to turn there. And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them brick. Even to the same time. Yeah, that doesn't make sense, right? Because it's not brick. It's white. Okay. Now, my point is this. Do you have any idea why they use the word white? I'm sorry, what?
Isn't cement white?
The cement white?
It's cement.
No. They had done something and put it into something in order for it to be white. Now listen, Does the creator of heaven and earth ever use fire or furnace to purge something from us? Yeah, he does. And what comes at the end of it? Either gold or silver. So when you are burning something in fire, you're going to do something with the content. And when they made bricks, when Egypt had to make, in Moses' time, it says they had to make bricks. In Hebrew, it says they had to make white. They had to make white, both places. It doesn't make sense in our English. So, in a sense, what does white mean, biblically? Cleansed, purified, made rock, made firm. Now, on television, I don't know if you see this or not, I already watched the History Channel and how things are made. And one of those very interesting tests is that they took this part in the book of Genesis. And they said, okay, how could you possibly, why did they use brick when they could have used stone? Remember it says here, the brick was stronger than stone. And so what they did, I think it was how things are made. He went and took normal brick that he made, according to the ingredients, according to what was written, and put a little pressure on it, shattered. So he put it into fire, and like 300 degrees. Put an input pressure on it, it lasted longer, and all of a sudden it shattered. He went up to something like 3,000 degrees. And now, pushing down on the ton, it was like 1,500 tons to break the brick. It became stronger. So in fire, in the furnace, now when God looks at you and looks at me and looks at the people that he have written in the Torah, written in the Bible, and he puts them through fire, does it make them weak?
No.
It makes them strong. He said to one of the prophets, I'll make your head as hard as flint. Now, that prophet didn't automatically have a head of brick. He went through some very serious trials. Bad news, bad thing, horrible things happened to him. But he was made strong. So when we look at this thing, and now the Tower of Babel being built, and the city being built, with such powerful, mighty stones, or bricks in this case, it's very hard to penetrate, to get in or to get out. Right? So we're looking at this story. It says, okay, now, what was the purpose? Do you know what the purpose was? Why did Nimrod and his group, what was the reasoning behind it all? Why build, why have one of those cities build such firmness in it? What was his object? What was his thought? What was he trying to accomplish? Sorry, what? Make himself a name. But name Nimrod wasn't made big. Yes.
It says that he may reach into the heavens, so he wanted to be like God.
Well, let's read it. Just in case we missed it. What does it say now? Let us do this. Why? Let's build us a city and a tower whose top reaches into heaven. What on earth is that all about? We got towers now because of Carnegie much, much higher than ever recorded in the history of mankind because of steel. Huge, giant buildings. Remember the Twin Towers? Much, much higher. Huge, tall thing. But why reach the heavens? Yeah, we said that, reached unto God. But let's get a little closer to this. Yes, Daniel, the L.A.
It says, thus we scattered all over the earth. If you had a really high tower, you could have a city huge, and you could all know where the city center is. Because if you were miles away, you could still see it.
I said, let us make a name for us. Not make a name for me, but for us. Okay, it's a plurality of a word. Remember, it was men that went with him to build these cities. Mighty men, strong men, powerful men, very warrior men. So you got pictures in your mind. Okay, we got this in our mind, okay? But why did he do this? Why was it so important that they reach us unto heaven? What is a monument? We have monuments in our country, right? All right. We have the Washington Monument. We have the Jefferson Monument. We have George Washington's Monument. We have monuments of certain presidents and certain people. We have monuments of the men who died in World War I, men who died in World War II, men who do these things. We do this for a reason, don't we? It tells us the history or tells us the background, or at least it does one thing. Like that one with the memorial for Vietnam, it brought a lot of people together. Didn't separate them and scatter them around the world. We became united under that monument because we bring into our memory of the men and women who died, right? So that's the object of a tower. So it's to be able to bring them together. Oh, so now we have this big, huge tower. Tower basically means something that you build and strong and powerful and mighty as an image. So, what did God do about it? He came down and did what? He came down and he did what? He came down and he took a look. Oh, so that's weird. And Yahoo came down to see the city and the tower. Okay, he saw it. And what else did he see? People are echad. Echad. They're united. Echad. Now, I tried to look real quickly at Genesis. I couldn't find it real quick. Remember the statement that after the flood or during the flood or after the flood, where Yahuwah said, okay, the thoughts of man are always bad from birth. Right? But he gave the rainbow to let us know, even though we are bad from our youth, he's not going to wipe us out that way. We have this picture in our mind, though, about this great infernal burning thing. Right? Now, we look at that as very negative. But lo and behold, fire strengthens people. Are you ready for the fire? Understand what I'm saying so far? So let's go on here now. And in verse 6, and behold the people, Echad, and they have one language, and this they begin to do, and nothing will be restrained or isolated or be withheld from them. Because what do they do? In their mind, from the youth, it's always thinking of bad things. Evil things, corrupted things. Not of God, but of themselves. It says, let's go down. Very interesting word here. Verse 7. And he did something to it. What did your translation have that? One what? Confound. Huh? Confounded. Used. Okay. In Hebrew, this word means to anoint. To anoint? He's coming down here. He's going to anoint. Anoint their language. That they may not understand one another's speech. Sounds weird to have it in English, right? So we have to look at the verb to understand what is anointing. What is used in anointing?
Oil.
What do you do with that oil? You pour it. When Aaron was anointed, something over, this is the term of the word now, overflowed upon him. Overflowed upon him. It's old Hebrew. So it has two meanings. And one of them is to overflow. What did he overflow the people of Israel? I mean, with this language. He overflowed them with language. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean to confuse? How did he do that? Just by, I think we're going to have them speak French. And have them speak English. And then we'll speak Italian. And then we'll have them speak Greek. Now, did he say that? Have you used the term plural, let us? Let us do this. Remember that word? So he basically poured different languages all over the place. He overflowed them that they could not possibly use their own language. It's an awkward way to say, yes, he confused the languages. Yes, he mixed them. Yes, he mingled them. Yes, he confused them. But why? Why? Do you know why? I'm sorry, what?
They were accumulating knowledge too fast, and it wasn't part of his plan to that they should learn so fast.
What he said was, nothing will be restrained from them. Knowledge is one thing, but doing something is something else. We got to get this in the picture of your mind. Something was going on. He said, I got to stop them from doing something. What were they doing? Conquering people, killing people, murdering people. No, they're building a city. And building a big tower. That's what they were doing. He came down to see that. He didn't come down to see the military. He didn't come out to see how rotten this country is, in that country, in this people, and fighting and quarreling and bickering. He came down to see the city. Right? And came down to see the city and did something with it. You see a picture of him talking about? Find out what God had in mind, why he did what he did. Instead of trying to figure out, okay, he did it because all the people were bad. No. He did it because nothing would be withheld from them. Whatever they imagine to do, whether it's good or bad, they will do it. Getting the bricks so hot, so strong, so powerful, that it's difficult to break them and shatter them, what else will they learn to do? Now to us, that's great engineering, a great scientific, great wisdom, great, well, new invention here. And we live in our country of new thing, new invention, wonderful things. It's not that the bricks were bad. It's what they were going to do with them. Let me ask you a question. Building himself a name. So we know that God is the dude of the secret weapon. And that was confusing languages, right? And what did they happen? Well, they stopped building the building. They stopped building the city. And verse 9 says, therefore is the name, it is called Babel. Because they were unable to work together. What did God stop? Anything that they can do. I'm going to restrain them. I'm going to hold them back. That's odd. Way back during Nimrod's time. How fast was man advancing? We sometimes think that they were still Babylonians. I'm using that word Babylonian. I mean, a bunch of babbles. They don't know what to talk about. They're all confused. They're all chaos. These people have no idea what they're talking about. That's why they call Babylon. Right? Confusion. Well, no. Became that because of something. Okay. Back to my question. What was Nimrod and his men trying to accomplish? Trying to, let's put it this way, to establish. They're trying to establish a name for themselves, right?
Well, he also said, lest we be scattered. So they were trying to unite.
How do you keep people who could still speak the same language at his time, how would you keep them from being scattered? They all understood their own language. They could speak to one another every day. Same words, same language, same interpretation, same grammar. How was he concerned? Why was he concerned that they be scattered? Where would they go? Where would they go? Ah, control. That's the big thing about it. So let's ask ourselves, what is he wanting to control? Huh? People. How do we know that takes place? We live in our country today, Okay, let's take our Civil War. How did we ever unite together those 13 colonies and succeed in defeating the most powerful empire on the face of the earth at that time? Something brought us together. What was it that brought us together? Freedom. The big thing was freedom. And when Thomas Paine wrote that book, that pamphlet, it united the entire 13 colonies. An idea. Right? And then all of a sudden, the Americans began to put themselves and pull themselves together. But a lot of them still were not that united, were they? Well, when you're in the end all this time, and you're trying to figure out, how can I get these people from scat? How can I put them under control? Okay, let's put it this way. This city was going to be something. This great city, Babylon we call it today, was going to be the center of something. The core of something. What was it going to be the core of? He was to and was accomplishing all power, all money, all governmental decisions, all business, all control of commerce, all control of agriculture, all control of education, and many other systems. It was to be controlled center of the areas of the, where the people lived. He didn't have to do with the bow and arrow and knights and, you know, poison darts. He was not a dumb man. After all, they learned how to make bricks so hard that it was impossible to crush them. Far superior than we think they had weapons to be able to break the thing. Right? So now, since we live in our 21st century, we have a tendency to think of the Babylon. Right? The empire, Babylonian Empire. And when did the Babylonian Empire come into existence? When? No. When did the Babylonian Empire come into existence? During Nimrod's time? No. Oh, did it come during Moses' time? No. Did it come in Samson's time? Okay. Did it come in King David's time? No, I see. When did it come? God brought forth the empire called Babylonian Empire. God says, I am doing this. Man's not doing this. I am doing this. I am bringing it forth. I got raised up Nebuchadnezzar to do one thing. To destroy Jerusalem. And to ransack the Holy Temple. Right? So is God in control?
Always.
Always has been in control. So let's move on. We live in a world, our country, well, let me put it this way. This is telling me an inside story to share with you. In one sense, the United States of America, where you and I live, right? It's heading towards a controlling center for all areas of the American's life. Your life, my life. Wanting complete power and throw. We have now, you know, you're forced to buy insurance whether you want or not. If you don't, you get penalized. Would you like to be penalized? No. Will you be penalized? Yes. Do you have to buy insurance you don't want? Yes. What if you don't? You're fine. What if you don't pay it? You go to jail. You're breaking the law, federal law. Now, that's a minor thing. Now, let's talk about the book of Revelation for just a minute. All right? Let's turn there. Oh, no, you have to turn there. Let's just talk about it. It talks about something about, in Revelations, it talks about Babylon, the great city. Now, if Babylon, the great city, referring to Nebuchadnezzar, what makes this city great? What was its... Aha! Keep going.
Commerce and trade.
When they destroyed the woman, what happened? Wealth. They did have because of wealth, power, might. Everything was centered around, quote, the great city of Babylon. Now, it's a concept. So I'm bringing in another thought. I'm telling you, everybody has different ideas of what Babylon is, what city it is, and where it is, and who it is, and all that kind of stuff. I'm looking back at the time of Nimrod. What was his goal? To control agriculture, to control education, to control governmental scheme, control politics, control everything. Complete, total control. Now, does that mean that where ancient Babylonia is, that particular city that's in Iraq is really going to have that power over you? No. What's going to have power over you? A center of power. That's Babylon, the Tower of Babylon, the city of Babel, was a center of power of everything. It's not a physical city. Nor is it a concept. It's a reality of absolute power. Do you think it's going to happen? Well, so far, you can walk out of that room. So far, you have a Bible you can read. So far, you got that. I'm not saying the United States of America is doing it. I'm saying this is going to affect the whole world. Now, what is God going to do about it? He's going to come down, and he's going to confound the world again. He's going to confuse the world again. What did Messiah say? No, if you know the thief is coming, so you can guard your house. But you don't know when I'm coming. When I'm coming, I'm going to tear this place apart. Are you ready for it? Where was Nebuchadnezzar and the men at that time, were they fully aware that the creator of heaven and earth was going to come down and visit them? Doesn't say. He said he came down to see it. He didn't come down and say, by the way, my name is the creator of heaven and earth. Who are you? Oh, my name is Nimrod. Oh, did you know I'm coming? No, I didn't. Well, welcome. Is that what he said?
No.
He didn't know. He gave no warning. He just did it. How long does God take God to change something? 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years? At the moment he wants to do so, yes.
But he should have had the knowledge of Shem. I mean, the knowledge of what Shem had.
No. He's the son of Ham, not the son of Shem.
But Shem was the one who told the world after Noah's... And he
I'm
went
not
on
doubting
and...
that he did not know who there was a creator of heaven and earth because he's in the face of the creator of heaven and earth. Not, he obviously knew who the creator was. And he challenged the creator. Like I said last week, this is the first time a man did something. Put himself in the place of God. I am now God. Therefore, he challenged God in his face. Now, God didn't take action for a while. He just kind of sat there and waited. And waited. We've got these four empires, these four cities. One of those cities is called the Great City. Okay. And lo and behold, as time went by, lo and behold, down comes this language problem. Does God really work that way? Now, I'm going to ask you a question. As we go on now to the other side of the story and the rest of the chapter, there was a certain son of Noah. Was he associated with Nimrod? Oh. So remember, Babylon and Babylonian came from what sun? From what sun? Ham. All right? He had a son named Cush. Remember? And the Cush had a bunch of kids. And then after he had a bunch of kids, and they had a bunch of kids, they said, by the way, he had one more. They listed him as the last one, of Nimrod. You can have your interpretation what you want. What I'm trying to say here today is that when we look at Revelations, and it's this Babylon city, we seldom, if ever, compare it to Genesis, the 11th chapter. We see no comparison. There is a comparison. 11th chapter tells you, at the beginning, tells you something, what's going to happen at the end. At the beginning, we have this place where God turns into chaos and confusion. And at the end of the story, the same thing is going to take place. The end of the city. The end of the tower. The end of the monument. Do you think God's going to tear down monuments? What kind of monuments is he going to tear down? Statue of Liberty?
Yep. I was just
going to
say
that. Is he going to tear down the memorial to the Vietnam vets? Is he going to tear down, or is he going to tear down, let's say, Eiffel Tower?
He's going to tear down that which puts its place in.
Got it? God. Right. Tear down that which puts its place in the place of God, calls itself God. Now, we have an awful lot of people have a different interpretation of who's going to be. I'm not worried about that. I'm just telling you, what I'm learning here is that in this 11th chapter, it tells you the beginning when nothing will be withheld from them. We now live in a world and we unite ourselves together in a monument called the United Nations. A big, huge monument. Now, we are trying to come together, and we have a president of the United States right now who wants to have, called, no borders. No borders. What does that mean? He also said that America needs to become an average, ordinary country like the rest of the world. That's why he believes very strongly in the distribution of wealth. Not just amongst Americans, but in the entire family of men of nations. That's what he believes. He really strongly believes that. And he said that bluntly. That's what he believes. So where are we at now? Getting closer. How will you respond? With anger? Frustration? Disappointment? How will you respond? I'm sorry, what? Well, you can pray for our leaders. That's okay. That's not what I'm thinking about the relationship. About there was another family during the time this took place. That other family was the family of Shem. What was Shem noted for? What did Noah say about Shem? You forgot. Well, what does the name Shem mean?
Name.
Name of what? He's going to hang on to the name of the creator of heaven and earth. And he said, the God of Shem, the Elohim of Shem. Now, so Shem was of the three who God passed on his knowledge to. Simple as that. Now, 11th verse, 10th verse. Now, these are the generation of Shem, 100 years old. And he begat a guy named what? Arphaxad. I can't pronounce that word very well. What does that name mean? I shall fall as the beast. I shall fall as the beast. Beast is really weird. I'm breast, rather. I shall fall. I shall fall at the breast, as the breast, and curse the breast bottle. Weird. Then he had a son. What is his son's name? Sela. What does that mean? It means sprout. Something you begin with. Also has another meaning behind it. It also has the meaning of weapon and missile and to shoot. Then he had a son. What was his son's name? What does Eber mean? He's going to go to a region that is beyond where he is. Now, then he had a son. What was his son's name? What does that name mean? Division. Or divide. Now, in the 25th verse of Genesis 10, it says that he was born during a time when God came down and changed the languages. That's when he came down and changed the languages. What does it think that did to Shem? Oh, wow. Was Shem ready for it? I don't think he's ready for it. But was he surprised? Remember, he kept on the name. He's the one that held the name. And these lines we have going all the way down lead to whom? Yahshua. And the line ends with Yahshua. It does not continue from that point on. It stops. Book of Luke. You can read that by yourself. Then it breaks in. We'll talk about the next one. Ru, which means friend, or friend of Elohim, basically. Verse 20. 21, 22. He had a son of Sergah, which means a branch. A branch. Step.
Question about Eber. When it said the earth was divided, was that the time of Babel then?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It says in the 10th chapter, verse 25. Then he had this son named Nahor, which means person with a heavy breath. That's all that really means. That's all it really means. Then he had another name of son. Next one was called unusual name. What is his name? Terah. What does Terah mean? Delay. Interesting. Odd thing. What was he delayed by? Was he delayed? He's given that name to delay, and guess what happened? He was delayed. Where was he going? Verse 27. Yes.
He waited a lot longer to have children than a lot of the other ones. Most of the other ones became fathers in their late 20s, early 30s.
He
waits until he's 70 to even have children, so maybe that might have been part of his delay too.
And we go into now the 11th, 27th chapter. This is the third. No, the first one is about Nimrod and the Tower of Baal, right? The second phrase is about the sons of Shem. The third and final one is the generation of Tehor. Why is it therefore? Why don't we just continue on with the story? Why don't we just continue on with this thing? Well, it tells us something about this man. Now, if we go back, we don't find details about any of the other sons. Something happened to them. We don't find out detail of what happened to them. But now we have this particular one who was delayed. What was he delayed on? He had three sons, of course, Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Lot. Lot means, by the way, covering or being enveloped into an envelope. And Nahor died before his father, Terah, in the land of nativity of Ur, that means flame, or Chaldean, means clod breaker. And Chaldea means clod breaker, yes.
He didn't get to go any further. Abraham went on without Terah. So he was delayed from going into the promised land.
Okay, wait, but after his son died, where did Terah go? He went and he took Abram, took Lot, took Abram's wife, took another one lady. He took them to a place which he named after his son. What does his son's name mean? Oh. A mountain man. He's a mountain man. Well, that's odd. Doesn't tell why he died or how he died or anything else. All we know, he died before his father died. Perhaps in the presence of his father, we can assume that. Doesn't tell you that. Then we have this interesting thing. And he did not go on. Verse 31. And Sarah took Abram, his son, Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, and his son's Abram's wife, the son's Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldea to go to the land of which means here lowlands, coming down from the mountains, going down into the lower lands. But he didn't continue, did he? Now, how old do you think Era? I've got to leave my paper here. I find it very fascinating. How old do you think? Let's see, let's go to Terah. He died at 205 years of age. That's quite a long time to live, right? Of course, Ed has lived longer than he after that, but nonetheless. Now, when did Abram leave his father? How old was Terah when he left his father? Very important time in history to know. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about Daniel brought out about the timing of how the dates are in the biblical thing. And we found that Abram was, 1998 B.C.? I had calculated out to be 1999 B.C. How old was that date? How old was Abraham when that date took place? He was 75 years of age. The first 2,000 years of history recorded in the Bible. His father was 145. Abram's father was 145 when he left. Do you know that Terah actually got to see or hear of the birth of Isaac? How old was Terah when Isaac was born? 170. Wow. He lived quite a long time later, 205 years later. So we have a picture here of a line that goes on and on and on and on and on, all the way down to Jacob. And when you look at the birth of Jacob, Isaac was 60 years old when Jacob was born. And I come across my chart, and Shem was 548 years old. Now, Shem didn't live in the land of Canaan. He lived far east, in like the Persia, land of Persia. He lived back in those days. So, what do we see here? What is God telling us in this particular chapter? It's just a bunch of stories or events. What is the purpose behind this thing? We see here in the 11th chapter, God stopped. He hindered. He held back. He withheld mankind, not just Nimrod, mankind from doing whatever they wanted to do. And then the story shifts quickly in the 11th chapter of the end, where God put a stop to something, another beginning with Shem. The 10th chapter, we didn't go through the last son, did we? When Japheth, Ham, and the last one is the sons of Shem. And I didn't go there this time. Because the 11th chapter stops the Tower of Babel. It says they left. They couldn't continue. They're no longer a threat. No longer a danger to society. No longer central control. No longer control over how people think. Because now they have different languages. Their words come out different. That's an act of God, not the act of man. Then he leads us directly, I find very fascinating here in the 11th chapter, to the sons of Shem, all the way down to the father of Abram. Which, of course, the next chapter is about whom? Abram. So is the book of Genesis about a lot of people, from Adam all the way down, all the way down, all the way down, all the way down, to one man named Abram? Or is it a story telling us how God works? Do you think that, as I said before, do you think Noah was so happy when the flood came? How many days was he given notice? 7 days given notice. That's pretty short notice, isn't it? 7 days is real short. Yeah, he built the ark, and okay, but no animals there. Nothing there, just supplies for him, but nothing there. Then he had 7 days to get him in. And, you know, I don't think he had a crew of 100. I think he had a crew of his 3 sons and their wives and his wife bringing him on that ship. And he had 7 days. Remember, Noah didn't seal it up. The eternal sea lit up for him. Quick, fast, and sudden. Unless, when the Messiah says he's going to come, when? You see the pattern here in Genesis? The Garden of Eden. What did God say to Adam when he didn't show up? Why are you not here? That was his question. He had an appointment with him, and Adam didn't show up. What did he say to Cain when his brother wasn't there? Why is your brother not here? Doesn't say where, why. Very interesting terminology in those two places in Genesis. They both had an appointed time with the creator of heaven and earth. Both Adam and Eve at that one spot where at the cool of evening, a specific time, the Messiah, or the creator of heaven and earth, was going to be there, and they didn't show up. Now, the daughter of Cain and Abel, they had always had a custom of giving an offering, giving an offering, giving an offering. Now, this last time, an offering was, uh-oh, something's amiss in this one. We went through that story. Now, was asking yourself some questions. Because the issue what I'm trying to get across is this. As much as the Messiah says, they did not know until after I did it. Tower of Babylon, they did not know till after I did it. The Messiah is going to come as a thief in the night. Doesn't mean dark. Meaning to be caught completely unaware. Are you aware?
Yes.
That's important to be aware. And I feel that why the 11th chapter ends with the story of Shem leading on to Abram is because of this. They were aware. The line of Shem was aware. Especially those names listed there. In the 11th chapter, he had a lot more sons than are not listed there. And there's had all the, and each one of those men had a lot more sons, but they're not all listed there. The other chapter lists a lot more people there from the line of Shem. But a certain line was in line with the name. Only a certain line was in line with the name. I find it very fascinating. I think I'm finished. Any comments? There's another way of looking at it, where we look at the city of Babylon and we think it's going to be some country or some nation or some city somewhere, and basically the object of Nimrod was to have complete, total control. Now, at the end of life, end of mankind, we talk about this great, power of everybody being under, you know, the mark or under the whatever it is we have. Everybody has a concept of what that means. But it means basically under the complete and total control, including one major thing. What is it that included? Military might, strength, weapons, war? Trade. Commerce. Our country is in trouble because of trade. Because of commerce. I mean, bottom line, because that's how human beings are. They think how valuable something is, or how much it costs. What's it going to cost me? What's it going to cost you? And that's what we are right now. Many of you are probably going to have a tax increase relatively quick. The state of California is going to be the highest tax state in the union. And guess what? You're going to pay for it. welcome to the e-commerce world, economic world. The politics wants to control what? The politics really want to control guns? Oh, yeah. They really want to control... They want to control every aspect of your life. What part do they not want to control over? I'm not anti-government now. Just I'm looking at history and look at where it's at. We also have known that every time there's been a democracy, the longest they ever lasted is how long? 200 to 300 years. What happened after that happened? Dictatorship. And then a civil war. I'm not saying welcome to that. I'm just saying, Are you ready? But at the very same time, I have to ask you a question. What's God going to do? He just may sneak in with a deadly secret weapon. His son. Hopefully. And the world will not be ready for him. They're not ready for him now, and they never will be ready for him. Are you ready for him?